Most of you probably remember where you were when the medals were won.
Consecutive Olympic gold medals.
Now, do you remember where you watched the Clarkson Cup?
Overside takes a shot and scores! Laura Stacey with the overtime winner for Markham. Go get it, girls. It's your first Clarkson Cup for the Markham.
The Isabel Cup.
On Twitter, it's the Isabel Cup final between the Metropolitan Riveters and the defending Isabel Cup champion, Buffalo Buttes.
No? What about when one of the leagues vanished overnight? Do you remember that?
Just 1 week after the championship game and the most successful Clarkson Cup weekend ever, the Canadian Women's Hockey League has folded.
Women's professional hockey has been skating uphill for as long as there have been attempts to play it in front of paying customers. These women, who we watch, millions of us, mouths agape at some of the best Olympic hockey we've ever seen, struggle every step of the way just to get the kind of support that even second-tier men's leagues can count on. They fight for a living wage, for TV partners, for marketing money and sponsorships, and even just to all play in the same league. And now, hundreds of them are willing to risk their livelihoods and their careers to try to find a future for their sport. So how did it come to this? Why don't the world's best female players have a league of their own? And is the NHL about to get involved? And would it actually make things better if it did? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Christina Rutherford is a senior writer for Sportsnet.ca. Hi, Christina.
Hi.
Tell me a little bit about what is happening in the world of women's hockey right now, and then we'll rewind and talk about how we got here.
Overall, I would say it's pretty bananas. You have a league called the NWHL, which is based in the U.S. and is now the only professional women's hockey league based in North America.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a couple hundred players that are now opting to sit out this upcoming season unless there's a feasible and reasonable league for them to play in. And at this point, they say there isn't.
So rewind about a year ago as last season was starting. What options did the best women hockey players in the world have and where were they?
So there was a CWHL based in Canada, mostly. Four teams in Canada, one in the U.S. and one in China. And then there was the NWHL based exclusively in the U.S. So players had the option to play in one league or the other. Obviously, if you played in the CWHL, you were traveling to China. You were doing a little bit more travel. In the NWHL, you were exclusively in the U.S. in places like Buffalo and Minnesota and Connecticut. And so the salaries were pretty equal as far as the two leagues go.
What kind of money are we talking there?
So the low end was around $3,000 and the high end was around, I believe, $15,000 in that neighborhood.
That's a really low end.
Yeah, it is a low end. And so any players making that would also be teaching or doing some other job. The higher-end salaries were given to national team players, and they do not have secondary jobs, so they make money through sponsors. And that's sort of the very few, right? You're talking maybe 50 players where they don't need a second job to make a living.
Those are the Olympians, the gold medalists, etc.
Exactly. That's almost exclusively the Canadian and American national team players that can do that. The Natalie Spooners, the Kendall Coyne Schofields that are making enough money sort of on the side and through their national federations to not need a secondary job.
So there's two leagues with kind of fragile but existing finances. And then what
Good
happens?
Way to put it. March was interesting because in March, the Isabel Cup was won in the NWHL by the Minnesota Whitecaps, which is an expansion team brand new to the league. And Kendall Coyne was on that team. And then near the end of the month in the CWHL, Calgary won the Clarkson Cup. And that team, you had American stars like Brianna Decker on that team. You had Brianne Jenner, a Canadian star on that team, playing together, winning the same championship, celebrating together. It was quite something. It happened in Toronto. More than 9,000 fans show up. The league is looking, you know, I wouldn't say great, but as good as it's looked, really. They've got a pretty good fan base turning up. It was a great game. And then a couple days later, boom, this news drops and the league announces it's folding. And it comes out of nowhere. So players have no idea that this is in the works.
So they raised the cup in the CWHL, and then a few days later, did they, like, they canceled the whole league?
Yes. So they announced that as of May 1st, the league would no longer exist. And this was a decision made by the board of directors, and they basically said that the league was not financially viable going forward. They couldn't see a way to operate it, and so they just decided to shut it down.
You've covered this league for a few years now, and you've kind of seen the trends. Was it, you mentioned it was a good cup. Was it trending up? Was viewership declining? Was the audiences going away?
No, I would say over the years that I've covered the CWHL, it's been pretty, I guess stagnant would be the word in terms of you haven't seen massive growth. You haven't seen massive declines either. You see worrisome things like Calgary playing in its semifinal, and there's just, you can count the number of fans in the stands. Mm. And then you see encouraging signs like the All-Star game, and there's almost 10,000 people in the stands. So it didn't look any better or any worse than I would say I've seen it in seasons past.
What was the reaction like when the league announced it was closing? Did you talk to players right afterwards?
I did, yeah. And I mean, I think the most interesting reaction I got was from Liz Knox, who's the co-chair of the CWHLPA, or who was. I guess she still is. It was a complete surprise to her. So she had no idea. And I think that really irked players because there was no point where they felt like, okay, we can step in and work together and try to save this thing. They didn't have kind of this notion that it might fold. And so it just felt like this decision was coming down. They couldn't do anything to stop it. And speaking to people like Sammy Joe Small, Olympic gold medalist, former Team Canada goalie, one of the founders of the league, had no idea that this was happening because she's not on the board. And so this came out of nowhere for her too, which is pretty shocking.
Yeah, usually there would be some kind of dialogue. I mean, I know the pay is not much, but hey, you need to take a pay cut, or we need to restructure some sort of deal or fold a team or two. But this was celebration and then goodbye.
Exactly. Yeah.
Was the push for a single league, would it have done anything to prevent the CWHL from folding? And where was that at the time? Because that's not a new idea that's come out of the last couple of months.
No, it's not. And I did a feature on, you know, what's going on in women's hockey a couple months before the end of the season. And what I was told, although I couldn't get anybody in the CWHL to confirm this, which now makes a bit of sense.
Yeah.
But I was told that the two leagues, the NWHL and the CWHL, were working toward a merger. And players had been, you know, players like Hillary Knight, the more kind of visible players, had been more and more vocal about the fact that, you know, we want to play in the same league. And if you looked at it, it was a bit ridiculous, right? You had Shannon Sabados, Team Canada goalie, competing for the Isabel Cup. You had Marie-Philippe Poulin, Team Canada captain and star, competing for the Clarkson Cup.
Right.
And so, obviously, if you want to sell women's hockey, you want women's hockey to be the strongest product possible, you need these players playing against one another. And so certainly there was a push in that direction, and the two leagues, I'm told, were working towards it, and then obviously that ended. And now we do have one league now, which is what players wanted, but now a lot of players are saying they don't want to play in the NWHL.
How could that deal have gotten done, or how could women's hockey have been supported better or even just pushed a little bit by other entities, by the Olympic federations, by the NHL? Was there any talk of them getting involved?
So the NHL was involved on sort of a low level in terms of a little bit of a financial help for both leagues, and always the same amount of money. And certain teams were partnered with NHL teams. So in Calgary, the Inferno were partnered with the Flames, for example. But that partnership, I mean, the Flames helped design the logo and paid for the jerseys and gave, you know, a small monetary donation, I guess, to the Inferno. But it wasn't something that you would say, okay, you know, that's helping this team extraordinarily. So both of these leagues need investors to step up. They need certainly more awareness. There's been a ton of news about women's hockey lately, and I think it's opened people's eyes to the fact that these leagues exist, which is a great thing. But I've heard from a lot of people in Canada saying, you know, I had no idea there was a professional women's hockey league in my city or near my city until it didn't exist.
Whose fault is that? Where's the failing there?
I don't know if it's a failing. Every new league is going to encounter these kind of troubles at first, right? But certainly there hasn't been enough publicity, and everything comes back to money, right? Like, if you don't have enough money to hire somebody to do social media, PR, that type of stuff, like, you're going to have a hard time selling tickets. And in Toronto, the Furies, the CWHL's Furies, sometimes drew, you know, a couple hundred fans to their games, if that. And that's, you know, that's not a sustainable thing. But often it really was that lack of awareness. Like, nobody knew that they were playing at MasterCard Center, which is a shame because they had players like Natalie Spooner and Renata Fast, Sarah Nurse, all national team players, stars on that team, playing, you know, on weekends, on Sundays, and it went largely unnoticed.
What's the difference, or I guess what was the difference, in the quality of play between the CWHL, which got a couple of hundred fans coming out, and women's hockey at the Olympics or the World Championships, which I think Canada's shown it will show up to watch?
Yeah, absolutely. Hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people watching those games. And they're often, like, that gold medal final at the Olympics, to me, has been the highlight of the last two Olympic games. It's been unbelievable and such a good showcase. And so that's been the frustration for these players is, you're all watching us now. How about during our actual seasons? How about when I'm playing for the Buffalo Buttes or the Toronto Furies? I mean, the level of play is really high. I think anybody that goes to see a professional women's hockey game goes away and says, you know, that was a great game. That was a great product. It's just not getting the eyeballs that it deserves.
So tell me about what happened last week then and the players' reaction to the CWHL disappearing and what happened next.
So last week, the players and Billie Jean King and Bauer issued a statement and said basically that effective now, they will not be playing in any league in North America next season unless professional women's hockey gets the support and the resources that they feel it deserves. So I think everybody knew that something was going to happen after the CWHL folded. I think that shocked a lot of people. It shocked the director of the NWHL PA, Anya Battaglino, who didn't really know that that was in the works.
Really?
And who was working towards getting players a better contract and has, in fact, achieved that.
Hmm.
So effective next year in the NWHL, players will be making 50% of any sponsorship deals. So say Mazda comes in and says, I want to give the league $100,000.
Yeah.
$50,000 of that goes directly back into players' pockets. So that's a brand new
addition. That doesn't happen in any other league, I don't think, or at least not in the big ones.
No, I've never heard of anything like that. And that's obviously a big step for players. But the question now is, with some of, well, the world's best players now saying, we're not playing in that league, where does that leave the NWHL as far as getting those sponsorships that maybe would have been easier to do when the assumption was they're the only game in town?
So how many players right now are vowing to boycott at least the upcoming season? And what do the rest of the players do? Are there enough of them to still play? Will there still be a season?
So there are more than 200 players that have made this pledge, and they're not calling it boycott. They're saying sit out.
Okay.
That are sitting out next season unless something magical happens and a league comes out of nowhere that suits their needs. As for the rest of the players, and this is largely NWHL players.
Right.
But the all-time leading goal scorer in the NWHL, for example, has not made this pledge. Neither has, you know, a good number of really elite all-star level NWHL players.
So it's not unanimous by any means.
It's not unanimous. No, not at all. And I think that's an interesting part of this movement. I talked to Kaylee Fratkin last week, I think it was. She's the first Canadian to ever sign in the NWHL. She's been playing in that league since day one. And she made a really interesting point, and it wasn't necessarily negative, but she said, you know, I didn't sign up to have Hillary Knight and Kendall Coyne and these national team players sort of express my views on women's hockey. So her standpoint was she obviously supports the notion that things need to be better, should be better, she would like them to be better, but she didn't get enough answers from the people spearheading that movement, the For the Game movement, to feel confident that she should align herself with it. And so her plan next season is to play in the NWHL. And she's not alone there. There are a lot of other players that are doing the same.
What's the sense of what would happen in the NWHL if this continues? Because like you said, it's a league that struggles for a profile kind of at the best of times. And this is a lengthy list of national team stars who are theoretically ticket draws. Can they have a season and succeed next year without these players?
I think they can, and they have in the past, because in Olympic years, their national team players disappear.
Right.
And actually, they'd had one of their best seasons during the last Olympic year in terms of draw and number of fans. And they're also coming off their best season yet. So the Minnesota Whitecaps actually recorded a profit last year. That's never happened, to my knowledge.
Wow.
In terms of a team that's actually owned by the league. And they sold out every single game. They sold out their playoff games in a few minutes. And same in Buffalo. They did really well. Boston was starting to draw a lot of fans after aligning with the Bruins. That partnership really helped them. So I think the league will be rolling along. Certainly, as far as the skill level goes, you're going to be missing players like Kendall Coyne Schofield mm-hmm. and Shannon Sabados and the draw that they bring. But you still have a lot of elite talent, to my knowledge, that will be playing in that league.
What happens next? What's the other shoe that could drop here?
The question on everybody's mind is the NHL going to get involved in a, you know, really meaningful way? And the answer from Gary Bettman has always been, while there's a league in North America, we don't want to be a bully. We're not going to come in and start another league and put anybody out of business. We have no interest in doing that. And so in a lot of people's eyes, the NWHL is in the way of the NHL getting involved on that level. And I think, you know, the players deciding to sit out in a lot of eyes was an attempt to kind of get the NWHL to step out of the way or force the NWHL to step out of the way. But I don't see Commissioner Danny Rylan doing that. If anything, I see her working really hard to try and make the league the best it's ever been and maybe to try and convince the best players in the world to come back to that league.
Is that the best case scenario for women's hockey, though, if the NHL wants to get involved, but the NWHL is saying, you know what, actually, we're going to grow this league. Thanks. Like, is that in the end, in the long run, is that in its best interests of the game?
I don't even know how to answer that question because I've never seen an NHL business plan for women's hockey.
Fair.
And I don't know that the players have either. That was something that came up when I was talking to Kaylee Frack, and she sort of asked that, you know, she compared it to, I have this great job that I like, and somebody comes along and says, hey, I'm going to offer you a job. And you have questions like, who's my new boss? Where am I going to work? How much am I going to get paid? And they can't answer any of these questions.
They just say it'll be better.
Yeah, it'll be better. And it's sort of, yeah, just this idea at this point. And maybe there's things happening behind the scenes that I don't know about in terms of talks with the NHL. But when you don't know what that'll look like, it's hard to say that's the best option. Obviously, from a higher level, you look at, okay, they have all the funding, all the awareness. If they started a women's league, I don't doubt that it would be pretty successful out of the gate because they would make sure it was. They've got the money and the resources and the people to do that.
Right.
It's just a question of what, if anything, they want that league to look like. And if you look at the NWHL, like I said, it's coming off its best year. So to me, that's the best option there is right now. I mean, it's the only option there is right now.
What does it mean to you, or what do you think of the fact that people have been talking in the mainstream press more about women's hockey over the last month, considering league closures and finances and sit-outs, than we ever do about the actual league?
Yeah, I mean, as maybe frustrating as that might be for players, you know, we're finally getting attention and it's because we're not playing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also a great thing for the game. People are paying attention to it and presumably will want to know what's going to happen next. And hopefully what happens next is the best answer there is. And hopefully it leads to the best, strongest single league in North America that we've ever seen. I mean, as kind of negative as it can look, we're talking about all the negative aspects of it. The players aren't paid enough, that sort of thing. It could lead to the best situation we've ever seen for the women's game.
Thanks, Christina.
Thank you.
Christina Rutherford, senior writer for Sportsnet. That was The Big Story. For more from us, we're at thebigstorypodcast.ca. We're also at TheBigStoryFPN on Twitter. And you can check out our brother and sister shows, including Remember Moms in the Middle Season 2, out now at frequencypodcastnetwork.com and at Frequency Pods on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. You can find all of our shows everywhere there are podcasts, wherever they exist. We'll be right there. Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, your platform of choice. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.